The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another Red Sox Bastards of Boston Hot Stove edition of the podcast. Jason Kelly, Steve McGreevy with me tonight. I am Terry Cushman. We are going to talk some trade rumors involving a pretty big name starting pitcher, at least in the last year. What is Garrett Whitlock's future? That should not be a question, but apparently it's questionable, and we will get into that. More thoughts on the Nick Pivetta qualifying offer. He has still not made a decision on that, but we will give more thoughts. And some other random free agents that the Red Sox are allegedly linked to. So we've got,
allegedly, that's real strong. Allegedly,
there's a lot of pots on the stove tonight, and we're gonna get through it all in the next probably 30, 40 minutes or so. How are you guys?
Oh, just peachy. I mean, you know, it's not exactly hot stove season. You can still put your hand on the stove at this point in the off season. As you said, it's all just like, oh, teams are linked to this guy, and these teams are linked to this guy, and that's basically just means, hey, who called you about so-and-so? Oh, these teams. Okay, great. Doesn't mean it was a long conversation. No, just could have been a two-minute phone call. So it's kind of hard to parse out like what the serious ones are and what are the joke ones at this point. But hey, at least there's some news. At least there's some interest going on. But if it's going to be another winter of just, hey, the Red Sox are the interest kings, I'm out. Like I can already tell you what my prediction will be for next year. So hopefully it's a little bit better than that.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I do want it to be better than that, but it does give that vibe that it's like a bunch of five-year-olds sitting around making a Christmas list. You know, it's like, what can you take seriously at this point? And it's like, yeah, everyone's got their dream sheets of like, I want this guy here and I want to sign this guy. And it's like, you know, once we bring back to reality after the winter meetings, maybe we might get, you know, a touch of, sanity. But yeah. I mean, they link the Red Sox to every big name player that's available out there because I think the media just assumes that we're going to go and spend money on them. But apparently they haven't been paying attention for the past 7 years.
You know, it's called hot stove season, but I think as far as the Red Sox aspect of it goes, we should just call it Pinocchio season because it's just, you know, the nose is already all the way extended. Like they don't even need to lie anymore. Like that's what I'd call it. And before we came on, I was like, well, never mind, I'll give this take in the end if I remember. But
for the Pinocchio thing, Tristan Casas is a real boy,
is he?
I think.
All right. Yeah, he lies a lot too. There's a lot of pathological shit wrong with this team. But anyway, Charlie's going to be mad. Here we go. So let's start off with one rumor that should be plausible. It probably won't be, but it should be plausible. Garrett Crochet is out on the market, and I think the White Sox can't wait to get rid of this guy because he kind of screwed them last July because he wouldn't be traded without an extension in place. So teams were like, eh, and they passed. So that kind of complicated things. And then he kind of fell off a cliff in the second half as far as his performance went. So it's still probably sell high territory for the White Sox. And he is a lefty, so it's somewhat of a match, but Jason, we'll lead you off. What are your thoughts? Should we be aggressive? Is this a coveted target that we should be pursuing?
I think absolutely. Now, you know, I say that with the disclaimer that, you know, am I willing to trade Roman Anthony at this point for Garrett Crochet? I am not sure. I'm not going to say no definitively, because at the end of the day, I want the Red Sox to compete right now. And as I've said about all the prospects, you know, whether it's Anthony, whether it's Teal, Mayer, Campbell, you don't know for sure if any of those guys are going to be future all-stars, future Hall of Famers. You hope, but as we've gone through in the past, you look at all the top prospects that have come up through the system throughout the past decade plus, not all of them pan out. Some of them just, they get up here and it's not the same. So now, do I think the White Sox will ask for him? Probably, because the thing that people are doing now is, and this is why I love Red Sox fans, it never change, guys, because they're already putting out trade scenarios of, well, we'll give him Cutter Crawford because that's a legit starter, and then we'll throw in Willier Abreu, and that'll get the deal done. And what you guys don't realize is the White Sox are so far away from competing, they're not going to take on a 29-year-old starting pitcher and a 25-year-old outfielder. And Willier Abreu is good. He's a good piece. But as we've said before, like, can he hit left-handed pitching consistently? We don't know because he hasn't done it. Cora doesn't really give him the chance, but he hasn't done it. Cutter Crawford is, again, approaching 30, and he's a back-end starter. The White Sox are not going to compete for at least 5 years. Their system is not good. They're in for a long rebuild. So with the Crochet trade, they're looking for guys that in 3 to 5 years will be legit Major League All-Stars. That kind of falls into, you know, Roman Anthony falls into that category. Marcelo Mayer falls into that category. Kyle Teal does too. Christian Campbell. Like, that's what they're going to be looking for. If you want to trade for Garrett Crochet, they're immediately going to say, we want someone in the top five, at least one, maybe two. And, you know, I saw like Lou Maloney talking about this on Twitter, where they're looking for, you know, a value better than what they got for the Dylan Cease trade. And his point, it's a good one, is that the difference is Dylan Cease was a proven starter. Garrett Crochet has been injured for most of his career and then finally was healthy this year and had a very good season, but as Terry pointed out, drifted off in the second half. Now, he's still young. He's a power lefty, and he's still young. But, you know, other teams are going to look at him and go, are we trading for, you know, are we doing what the Red Sox did when they trade for Chris Sale? And, yeah, it'll be great at first, but then he's going to break down because, you know, he throws near 100 and he's already been hurt. And, you know, do we really want to give up our future for this guy? Is he going to be the piece to put us over the top? So the White Sox are definitely going to take their time with the Crochet trade. They're probably going to talk to a lot of different teams. The problem I think the Red Sox is that they're going to run into is they're going to try to get Crochet for less than what he's worth. And that's where I brought up the Cutter Crawford and Willier Abreu situation. Like, they're going to try to do it that way. And the White Sox are going to say, look, we don't want two guys who pretty soon we're going to have to pay, because they don't want to pay anybody. After the wretched season they just had, their owner doesn't give a crap. And their GM came out and said, we're going to cut payroll. Like, after having the worst season, you know, like historically, they're still saying, yeah, we're not going to spend money. So they're not going to take on two guys who they still have arbitration years, but Crawford doesn't have many left. Abreu has a little bit, but in the next 3 years or so, they're going to have to pay those guys. They don't want to spend money. So they're looking at guys who are like 18, 19 years old, who have 7+ years of control, whose clocks haven't started yet, so that they can really reduce payroll and still sell their fan base, hey, the future is coming, you just have to wait. Kind of like what the Orioles did for a number of years. That's what the White Sox want to do. So unfortunately for Red Sox fans, like, they're going to ask for Roman Anthony. Craig Breslow should immediately say no. And then from there, it's, okay, how can we make this work without Anthony or Teal being involved? Because at this point, and I've said this before, Mayer, to me, is on the table. That guy with the injuries he's had already, I might consider that. I would actually consider Mayer over Campbell at this point. So that's where they're going to have to figure it out. And I think Breslow is going to shy away from that moment. I think once the prospects get involved, it's going to get too spicy for him. And some other team that is desperate is going to come in and be willing to give up their number two prospect, and that's going to be that. So I want Crochet, but I don't think the Red Sox have the balls to do it.
Steve.
Yeah, I was big on Crochet, Crotchet. I'd struggle with however to pronounce his name all the time. But I was big on him in the trade deadline. Like, he was one of the pieces that I felt that if we wanted to make a push and actually get into September, and, you know, meaningful ball in September and into October, that he was going to be a key piece in that. And they didn't pull the trigger. And it was more recently that I figured out that, you know, his perception of, like, with his trade stuff, it being like, one, he didn't want to get traded without an extension. There was another caveat as well, which was he would not agree to a trade if he was going to be potentially pitching against the White Sox in a postseason situation. So there was a competitor thing going on with the trade as well, which kind of hemmed him up. And I think maybe his performance fell off because for lack of better words, he threw his junk on the table and said, "What's up?" And they called his bluff. So, like, maybe he was pouting the second half of the year and that was part of his performance. I'm still real big on this guy. I think there's a way that we can do this without touching the big four. But yes, it is going to involve Cutter Crawford and Abreu. Those are going to be the two big pieces in that. And then there's going to be at least one top 10 prospect, if not two of our rated prospects. I would toss in Sandlin almost, maybe as like a little cherry on top, to aid in that. Arias would be another good one. I don't think our front office has the gumption or the strength or whatever you want to call it, the balls to actually pull the trigger on this deal. They want to keep everything and they want to gain stuff too, but they don't want to spend anything for it. And I think that's where they're stuck right now. We're going to have to let go of some pieces, and those pieces are going to hurt letting go. The Meyer trade, throwing him in part of that deal, I wouldn't be so hurt about that. Maybe that might explain some of the rumors where we're sniffing around for some infielders. Not really sure. It's all speculation so early on. Would love to see the guy come here, though. I really think that him working with our pitching staff and everything, that he would actually be able to succeed. I don't think he's going to be as explosive or electric as Chris Sale was when we picked him up from the Sox, but Chris Sale was on a different trajectory when we picked him up. The other thing that kind of burns is if we do get him, I do think that Crusher is a better pitcher than Pivetta, and then ultimately we're going to be paying one more than the other. I know we're going to get into that later, but that one kind of stings a little bit. But that also might, like, make Sam Kennedy okay with whipping out the checkbook and signing for Crochet, because it's cheaper than Pivetta, and that stinks. I know, but yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with this guy. Lots of speculation, lots of good vibes from him, but that's really all I can say at this point.
Well, I don't think Cutter Crawford makes a ton of sense in a pitcher versus a pitcher trade. And I think Crawford, we already know what his ceiling is. I don't know that there's a lot that another team can really do to get more out of him. Now, I mean, if we were simply trying to get a righty outfielder, it would be a... perhaps maybe an Alex Verdugo type guy, not him exactly, but someone like him, then yeah, maybe a Crawford deal for someone like that would make sense. But in terms of Crochet, I would try to work out a deal. I think Nick gave a very similar take one or two shows ago. I'm probably not giving up any of my top four, including Meyer. I mean, if you want to call the Mariners and make a deal for one of their studs, I would absolutely put Meyer in that. Crochet is just a bit of a wild card. Last year was his first year. I don't have exactly how many innings he pitched, but he hadn't pitched more than literally like 50 or 60 innings in a little while. And That's, I think, part of the reason why he didn't want to pitch a postseason without an extension. But I just haven't seen enough. I haven't seen enough. Now, let's say he doesn't get traded. He's a stud this year for the full year. Yeah, maybe I do put one of the big four in the trade next year for him. But I think the White Sox are going to be extremely motivated to do it. The other thing that... the other thing, just in the back of my mind, it just seems like everybody that comes from the White Sox is tainted for some reason. It's just a trash organization. And, you know, I don't want to hear anything about Luis Robert trades unless it's nothing for him. I might give Abreu up for him, but that's it, you know, and that might be a massive overpay because you're probably Robert or Robert, however he says it, is more injury prone than Tyler O'Neill. And that's a bad comp. That's a bad comp. So that's why I'm not giving up. But you'll have Red Sox fans on Red Sox Twitter give up a serious package for a guy like Robert and say that maybe a change of scenery would do it. But Eloy Jimenez just got non-tendered by the Baltimore Orioles, which kind of surprised me a little bit. I'm like, well, you know, they could DH him. I mean, he could be serviceable there. But they're like, nah. And so he's out there now. But we'll see. I do think it's going to cause something significant because there are a number of teams in on Crochet. So it's not going to, you're not going to get away with, you know, your number seventh ranked middle infield guy and whatever. Another thing too, Jason, you mentioned Campbell kind of versus Meyer, and I'm at the point now where I would almost replace Meyer with Campbell in the big four at this point, because Campbell's a righty. He's a middle infielder. He's a stud middle infielder. And you look at guys like Mookie Betts and Jaron Duran, they weren't really heralded guys when they were drafted. You know, they were drafted somewhat highly. I think Mookie was actually a fourth rounder. And then they had this surge and this epic breakout in the minors. I almost prefer those type guys than your number eighth overall in the first round. The guy with all the hype. I feel like your first round pick is a lot more likely to be a bust than the guy who actually comes out of nowhere and just starts tearing the cover off the ball. So I'm starting to covet those guys a little bit more. Now, having said that, I did say a year ago I would put Roman Anthony in a deal and blah, blah, blah. And that's a terrible take now. I wouldn't trade him for anything. I literally wouldn't. Seeing his numbers in AA and then a smaller sample size in AAA and where he's a lefty that absolutely destroys lefties, I'm not giving him up. And he's the number one prospect in all of baseball now, depending on which list. So, you know, my thoughts, I'm not an expert, but... you know, and things are very fluid when it comes to prospects, but I'm not willing to give him up. I'm open-minded on Crochet, I guess is what I'm saying, but I'm not willing to, he's not going to be the guy that I put the trade package that sends our farm system from third all the way down to 11th for. That's kind of where I'm at with him.
Yeah, numbers for Crochet, real quick. This past year, whatever, he put up 146 innings pitched. That's more combined than the three previous seasons. He really wasn't so terrible, even with the fall off at the end. 4.1 WAR. He only had a 1.16 WHIP. I mean, he's serviceable. He's very serviceable, even with falling off on the tail end. So, given the market. I don't think we're going to be able to compete with this. Like, there's going to be other teams that are going to put more serious offers on the table for this guy than what we're able to provide. And is just what you said, Terry, like, I don't want to sell our farm off for this one potential maybe kind of guy. You sell your farm off for Soto or something, you know, I don't quote me on that. I'm not saying we should do that, but that level of magnitude, like, you're reaching that deep, you know, you're pulling that, that would be the equivalent or the comp on that.
Yeah, it's risk versus reward. And The risk is that, you know, if Chicago comes calling and says, look, we really like this Christian Campbell kid, so you know what, throw him in. He's supposedly the number four of the big four because he slipped in at the very end when he got real hot, you know, the second half of last year. So give us Campbell and, I don't know, give us whatever, one of your 18 million shortstops that you still have. Give us Nizan Zanatello and throw in Hunter Dobbins, who's your best pitching prospect, you know. And if the Red Sox were to do that and Christian Campbell becomes Alfonso Soriano 2.0 and Garrett Crochet is on the shelf by July and, you know, just isn't performing, that's the risk, right? The reward is you get Chris Sale in his prime for God knows how many years and you sign him to an extension and boom, you suddenly have an ace, which the Red Sox have not had since the last time Sale was healthy, which is quite a while ago. So that's the whole thing. It's always going to be risk versus reward. It's just a matter of, you know, do you want to play it safe or do you want to make the big splash and go get him? Or do you want to make a splash somewhere else? It doesn't have to be Crochet. There are other pitchers out there that you can trade for or sign that could become your ace. Because let's face it, guys, we talked about this. Tanner Houck's not a true ace. He's not. He's a very, very good pitcher. But he's a, you know, number two, low end two, high three. If we're being realistic, he's on the Dodgers, you know, like he's, well, I mean, their pitching staff's kind of decimated, but if everyone's healthy over there, he's a number two or number three. He's not an ace. So there are other avenues to go get your ace. It doesn't have to be Crochet. So if the White Sox get ridiculous about it, I wouldn't blame them for walking away.
Well, they're going to have to make a move soon, though. With how tight the starting pitching is with free agency and what is potentially up on the trade blocks, teams that make moves early and secure it now are going to be the ones that get away with the financial, like a better deal out of this. The longer this waits, the tighter the pool gets, the smaller the selection gets. You're going to either see one of two things. You're going to see teams paying stupid contracts for players that are mid, or you're going to see something like we saw last year with Montgomery, where he sat halfway through spring training without a deal because everyone had just given up on it. I don't think that people are going to be giving up on those pitchers, and I think that the pitchers and their management, or not their management, but their representation agents are going to tell them to jump quicker than what was last year. So early bird gets the worm. So if we could make a deal early to sew this up, I would be okay with taking the risk, like what you were talking about.
So Crochet had a 5.12 ERA post All-Star break. So second half, not good. Made his debut in 2020, only pitched six innings. So let's call 2021 the debut. 54 1/3 innings. I'm not even in the right spot. 54 1/3 innings that year. Out of the bullpen entirely. 2.82 earned run average. Didn't pitch in 2022. Was that Tommy John?
I believe it was.
It says injury. Yeah. And then next year, 2023, he pitched again strictly out of the bullpen, 3.55. ERA. That was how many innings? Couldn't have been many. 12 2/3. And then finally this year, 146 innings. Despite that bad second half, a 3.58 ERA, 12.9 strikeout per nine. That's robust.
That's impressive.
Like, that's what elite relievers do. You know,
it's a good number.
Yeah, good
Looking
relievers.
Those inning numbers, too. Like, he can chew up some innings, too.
Let's be honest.
The Red Sox could have used someone to chew up some innings last year.
It was his first year doing that, and he kind of flamed out. And Cutter Crawford has kind of done that 2 years in a row, just completely gassed. And Crawford, if I remember right, closed out strong. September is just a blur to me. You know, pretty shell-shocked by that point. But again, like I said, I'm open-minded, but this isn't the year I want to back up the Brinks truck, and in terms of prospects, rather. He is willing to sign an extension, though, if you do acquire him. So that's nice. You don't necessarily get that with a Logan Gilbert type guy. So we'll keep an eye on that market. And the other thing, too, is do we have the prospects? Yes. Can we navigate the market? That's the tough thing because you got Craig Breslow. Like, I don't know. He's just very, very narrow. If you're given, it seems like if it's your number 25th or higher ranked prospect, he's not doing it outside of Nick York. But anyway, so another thing that pissed me off this week was that's been the theme so far. The Red Sox don't know if Garrett Whitlock is going to start baseball games or pitch out of the bullpen. And at present, before you even give your Whitlock take, who's your closer right now?
They don't have one.
That's a great question. They don't have an eighth inning. Martin and Jansen are gone. So while they're confused about Whitlock's future, and there's an obvious need for him in that bullpen, they're not committing either way. So, I mean, the easiest decisions are so hard for this team. It's just excruciating, apparently. Go ahead, Jason.
I mean, the definition of insanity is repeating the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Are we really going to do this again with Garrett Whitlock? Are we seriously going to try to make him a starter one more time? And here's my issue with this. If they're going down this avenue, then all that bull crap they've been spewing about, yeah, we really want to add a frontline starter, is just that. It's bull crap. Because if you're trying to convert this guy into a starter because you're that desperate for pitching depth, you have no interest in signing a Max Fried or any of these other free agents that are out there, Shane Bieber. Like, no, those are all pipe dreams. They're going to do exactly what they've done in the past. They're going to say, well, we were going to spend, but we had better in-house options. And, you know, Garrett has proven he can be a starter. He hasn't, by the way. But they'll say he's proven he can be a starter in this league, and we feel like he's fully healthy, and then he'll make two starts, and his hip will break again, or something. His knee will go out, or his shoulder will bother him. Who knows? The guy is made of glass, and the only year that he was actually helpful to you was when he pitched out of the bullpen, and he was dominant. So just, God, like, can someone just reach out and be like, first of all, as you pointed out, you guys don't have a closer. You also don't have a setup man anymore. So your bullpen all of a sudden is really thin. And this guy was a Rule 5 pick that you just hoped you could get something out of. And the only year you did was when he pitched out of the bullpen. So what, like, why, what are you doing? Like, why this desperation to make him a starter? It hasn't worked. It won't work. Put him back in the bullpen and keep him there. He's already signed, so you don't have to worry about him, you know, whatever, like getting all pissed off about his role. He signed. Like, you put him in the bullpen, he's making pretty good reliever money. So might be a little bit below market given what closers are getting now, but whatever. And also, you don't have to guarantee him the closer role either. Say, oh, no, we're going to go pay for a closer. You're the eighth inning guy, or you're the seventh, eighth inning guy. Like, this guy's barely pitched. So just get the most out of him that you can. Put him in the bullpen and keep him there. And for the love of God, just go spend on real pitching. Stop trying to make this guy into something that he'll never be.
Steve.
That's a perfect highlight. You know, it's like he did great out of the pen, Whitlock, which I think he's really good. He's really talented at what he does. But he should be that borderline, like, I'm not quite a starter. I'm that middle reliever. I'm the guy that can come in when the starter falls apart and hold the game together. He's not a setup guy. He's not a closer guy. Oh, and Kelly, speaking on what you said before, like, and the closers and stuff, Hauk is our closer. And to bring that point around, I think we've got some talented pitchers that I think we are using inappropriately. Whitlock needs to be in the bullpen. He needs to be the guy that comes out and pulls the game back together when the starter falls apart. Hauk needs to be the eighth, ninth inning guy that comes out with his angry Colonel Sanders facial hair and throws whatever it is he's got to throw to make it happen. He's just got that swagger of a closer. So I would love to see those two in that position. But the only way that those two are sitting in those positions is if we go out and spend more and get more actual pitchers in, and we stop trying to take relieving pitchers and make them starters, or we stop trying to take dynamite closeout pitchers and make them starters. You know, we're stretching everything way too thin here. And I think, honestly, the only reason that they're putting out the news that Whitlock might be a starter is for trade negotiation stuff, is for free agent negotiation stuff. They want to say, hey, we got starters. They want to be able to put that on the negotiation table, even though it's moot, because everybody knows, like, they're the clowns in the room, the Sox there, going, well, we've got starting pitching. Look at Whitlock. You know, so what was it you said, Terry? We don't need starting pitching. We have starting pitching at home. That's what I think that they're doing with this. I don't think they're seriously considering using Whitlock as a starter unless it is absolutely necessary. They do know his value coming out of the bullpen, and that's why they're hanging on to him. I don't know, man. I feel like they're just making jokes of us all.
But in your scenario, though, so, okay, they're hanging on to Whitlock to bluff other teams. If they put Houck in the bullpen, then they can't say we have starters. They just got rid of their best one. And they put him in
the bullpen. Wouldn't do that, though, now.
Well, so. They shouldn't. Yeah, no, Houck's got to stay in the rotation. There's no way you can put him back in the bullpen. So, you know, the whole thing with Whitlock, and, like, he's here, he's signed. I don't know however many more years. I think it's three to four. They locked him up pretty early. So he's here regardless. And he's got a tradable contract. So, yeah, they could trade him. But at this point, just go back to what worked. Put him in the bullpen. It worked. Just go back to that and then spend on real pitching. Go get a real closer if you want to. If not, if Whitlock looks really good, I'm willing to try that again. But I'd rather they go out and, like, get someone legit too, just to really make sure that back end of the bullpen is cinched up. But yeah, at this point, he can't go back in that rotation. He just can't.
No, it's suicide at this point.
It just pisses me off that they're saying it. Like, they're stupid. They're telling the league we're stupid. Like, you can't, you're just lying at this point about what his status is. Now, as far as his contract goes, he's only got two guaranteed years left. The rest are team options. So $5.5 million this year, $7.5 million in 2026. Then he has an $8.2 million option and a $10.5 million option.
So we can keep this guy for like 4 or 5 years for 1 year of Pavetta.
4 years, his age 32 season. And the thought was at the time of the extension was, wow, that's great, because he, you know, age 32, you should be able to sign him to a team friendly deal at that point. He's not a young stud anymore. So it just seemed perfect, but we continue to mismanage him. Now, we keep talking about that dominant season out of the bullpen. That was, how many innings? 73 1/3 innings. That's how many innings he pitched out of the bullpen, mostly the ninth inning in 2021, with a 1.96 ERA, elite. His strikeout per nine was 9.9, and I think it was much higher than that until August and September came along. Then it kind of came down a little bit. Didn't walk a ton of guys. And so, again, 73 1/3 innings as a reliever. After that, over the next three seasons, he never pitched more than 78 innings. That was in 2022. That was the hip injury year. But as a starting pitcher, over the last three seasons collectively, he pitched 168.2 innings. 168 2/3.
That's not starter material.
But that's all it took to blow out that elbow a second time.
You imagine if he actually gets under the pressure and throws, like what we were talking about with Crochet earlier, like he goes and posts 140 innings in a season. If he could even do that, I mean, would he even exist as a human, or would he just be like a pile of mush on the mound at that point?
He can't do it at all. I don't think there'll ever be a scenario where he pitches more than 80, which he's never done anyway. But So they have to put him in the bullpen. They absolutely have to put him in the bullpen. You have a need for him there. And actually, I keep forgetting about Liam Hendricks. I mean, he doesn't exist to me until we actually see him pitch. But theoretically, he is one of your late inning guys. He'll be 36, 37 years old this year. Hasn't had a full load as a late inning guy since I think 2022. So it's been a minute, you know, because he had the Tommy John, and then before that he had the cancer battle, which, you know, good for him. I mean, that's the scarier
good for him.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's you know, you root
I for love him. His positive vibe. So I'll pick up on you on that. Like, I love his positive vibe. Like, yeah. He's very upbeat. He takes the game as a game. And plays it serious enough, but respects the fact that it's supposed to be more casual, more like, you know, we're coming here to play a game and enjoy each other and enjoy the sport and stuff like that. So I get that vibe from him. So I like that he's coming back with that. Hopefully his physical performance keeps up.
Yeah. So back to the Red Sox, though, I don't like the rhetoric with Whitlock. I think they just need to be honest. Just be honest. Stop saying stupid things, okay? Because you've made a lot of stupid moves, and we're about to get to the next one here in a second. But when you make stupid moves and you say stupid things, you look stupid to the rest of the league. Nobody's going to take you seriously. Other executives aren't going to take you seriously. Players' agents aren't going to take you seriously. And good players aren't going to want to come here. We've got a problem with that already. So I don't remember when Dombrowski got hired. One of the first things he said is, yep, Hanley's not a left fielder. He not well, not on my watch. He ain't going to be playing there. In fact, you know what? I'm just going to send him home for the rest of the season. It was only like 5 or 6 weeks left, but that was 2015. Hanley went home and he came back as a first baseman. And I laughed at that. I said, yeah, okay, we'll see. And it actually worked out fine. But I miss that transparency from Dombrowski. You knew exactly what you needed. You knew what the roles were. How do you go from that to we don't know what Whitlock's going to be doing? It's just, all right, let's move on.
That's why I say it's a bluff. But yeah, we'll move on. That's why I say it's a bluff, because it doesn't make any sense for them to do this other than to float out that, like, we got options, like trying to be coy while they're going to the table. Like, I'm not all that hungry. So, you know, if your food is not all that appetizing, maybe I won't have a bite. You know, I'm kind of full right now. I think that was the whole idea behind floating that Whitlock idea.
I'm actually a decent poker player. I know cribbage is my game, but I'll be in Vegas all next week, by the way, massive tournament. But I'm okay at poker, and like Breslow's the type of guy where it's like it's his first game, and you're like, okay, he doesn't like you just know based on betting patterns what, you know, if they've played a while or not. But
Breslow's the guy at the poker table that when he gets a good hand, his eyes light up and he doesn't hide it.
His hands are shaking. Like, you
know, like, just looks too happy, like, and everyone knows it.
Yeah.
Trying to be casual.
I had a tell where my neck would pulsate, and apparently I would do it if I either was bluffing or had a good hand. But so they knew something was going on. And so
that seems kind of good, though. I mean, if they can't figure out whether you're bluffing or you got something good. I mean, if the Red Sox could tap into that, that would be fantastic. Maybe you could put on like a seminar for the execs there and show them how to do that stuff at the table there.
I'd wear a hoodie and kind of hike it up a little, and that's how I got around it. But yeah, I think that did go away after a while. But anyway, so yeah. So Nick Pivetta got the qualifying offer. I've given some extended thoughts on that. And so did the other guys. But Jason, what are your thoughts?
I was baffled by this. Like, I expected if any qualifying offer was going to be handed out, it would go to Tyler O'Neill, which would have made sense because he, even though he was inconsistent throughout the whole year, his overall performance and the fact that he's a right-handed power bat, which a lot of teams covet, it would make sense. A team would want to say, okay, well, you know what? We're desperate. We're willing to give up the draft pick to sign this guy. Would have been a great move by the Red Sox. you instead give it to Nick Pivetta, who is, what, 33 now? He's at 33 going on 34, has a ton of mileage on his arm, was sent to the bullpen at one point because he sucks so bad. Then you had to bring him back because you had no pitching depth and you had a ton of injuries, so he got back in the rotation. But he's a career 4.5 ERA pitcher. Everyone knows who Nick Pivetta is. He's, yes, he can be a high strikeout guy when he's on, and when he's off, he can give up 5 home runs in one inning. So it's the guy's a complete Jekyll and Hyde act, and if he went on the open market, I'd be willing to bet the highest contract he would get would be something like 3 years, $48 million, $13 million a year. That's the kind of player that he is right now. And this is not like to dump on Nick Pivetta too much. I'm more dumping on the Red Sox because, like, you've now hamstrung yourself. He's not going to decline the qualifying offer. He'd be stupid to do so. No team out there is going to say, you know what, 33-year-old Nick Pivetta, who's going to give up 37 home runs for us this year, is worth giving up a draft pick for. Not a single team is going to do that. Even teams that are desperate for pitching, they are not going to do it because of his age and because of the mileage on his arm and everything else. So you're pretty much guaranteed. He hasn't done it yet. I know, like, we were talking off air. He's got, what, another week or so, week and a half to accept it?
Till the 19th, yeah.
Okay, so he's got some time. He's going to accept it. He is. He'd be stupid not to do so. So you're now locked in with Nick Pivetta for $21 million. And here's the thing. People say, well, what do you care about the money, right? The Red Sox have the money. They're only, what, I think 66 or 67 million away from the luxury tax threshold going into this offseason. So that's correct. A third of it. You've spent a third of, because let's face it, as much as they want to, you know, bellow and say, oh, no, no, we're going to spend this year, we're quietly laying the groundwork to spend and be competitive again, which was a laughable comment from Craig Breslow. Yeah, as much as they say they're going to spend, the owner still doesn't want to go over the luxury tax. And until they actually do it, I'm not convinced he wants to. So you've got, what, 66, 67 million to play with, whatever the number is. You just blew a third of it on a back-end starter, on a number five. That's what he is. I actually think Giolito, a year after Tommy John, will be better than Nick Pivetta next year. So you, $21 million for a number five starter who you might have to demote to the bullpen again because he'll suck so bad? Like, again, that's a third of your available budget. So for all the people who think that just because Breslow is blowing smoke out his ass, that they're all of a sudden going to be the big bad Red Sox of the early 2000s where they're going to go out and, you know, spend a bunch of money and go past the luxury tax and all this. No, they're not. Their whole point is going to be, yeah, we spent money. We spent $21 million on our starting rotation. Didn't you see it? It was Nick Pivetta. Everyone else is going to want Max Fried or Corbin Burns or, you know, Shane Bieber. But no. We got Nick Pivetta, guys. We're outsmarting everybody. $21 million for that guy. Trust us. It's going to work. It was baffling to me. So just a really moronic decision. It makes no strategic or financial sense. And it already, like, as soon as I heard that, I'm like, this is going to be a bad offseason because they already don't know what they're doing. They already misnavigated the qualifying offer market. Like, that doesn't give me any hope for the actual free agent market. So, dumb move and does not set a good precedent for the rest of the winter.
It's rough, man. Like, and I'm a big fan of Pivetta. Like, I've been to a bunch of games where he was starting pitching. Maybe that's why I'm partial. You know, I was at the game right after he balked last year. And I got there early and was watching him warm up in the bullpen. And he was just, like, so fired up. Like, you see in his face, like, how important it was for him, like, going through his motions and making sure he didn't make those mistakes again. And I was like, this guy really cares about the sport. So that's why I'm kind of biased towards him, because I got to see him in that moment and see how important it was for what he was doing. I don't think that he's worth the qualifying offer. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's got time to accept this qualifying offer. But in the interim, if they throw down a contract for 3 years, 5 years, or something like that, that doesn't necessarily meet the qualifying offer for next year, but it's it's a contract extension. Say they give him like $12 million for 4 years or 3 years or something like that, $13 million, like more what in line with what you were talking about, what he's worth, Kelly. I'm not really sure, like, is that a possibility that he could still sign that and it wouldn't disrupt everything? Because that might be one of the things that they're trying to pin with him. They threw that qualifying offer out there because they knew it's like putting your used car out there for $10,000 more than what it's worth and then putting in the ad, don't lowball me, I know what I got. Anticipating that no one's actually going to make an offer on it, and then you can go back to Pivetta and make an offer that makes sense for the team and extend that out for a few more years. I could see that being a scenario because he is a good pitcher. And I really think him working with his staff, he has improved over the years. I think that if it wasn't for Alex Cora abusing the crap out of the rotation and the bullpen with how he shifts and moves and does all this other stuff, if they had like some actual consistency in what they were doing, they could settle into their roles. And then we wouldn't have questions like, is Whitlock going to start? No, because everybody knows where their spot is. So if maybe we can build more of that consistency and framework for the starting rotation and the bullpen to exist and know their lanes, then Pivetta is not an ace, but he's right at the top of that rotation if he is used in the right way. So I'm happy that we're probably going to keep Pivetta in one way or another, despite how the numbers work out and what teams do what and all this. I'm not happy that we're giving him $21 million. It's kind of embarrassing because looking at the other pitchers that are out there right now, I mean, what was it? Looking at Crochet, like, even with all the crazy trades that might happen or something, like, he's probably falling in line around 15 or 16 max. And he's probably going to perform better than Pivetta. So it's... That's why the numbers just don't make sense for me. So that's why I feel like they're overinflating and they got something else cooking. I don't know what they're cooking, but it smells like something's cooking.
So to answer your question, yes, you can still offer a separate contract extension after offering the QO. They would have to do that pretty soon because he's got until the 19th to either accept or decline the QO. The issue with that is, like you said, well, they could offer him 3 years at, you know, $13 million or something like that, right? Like the scenario I painted. But his agent might go to him and say, this is your last chance to make $21 million. You're not going to get anything near this on the open market ever again. Because next year you'll be 34. 34-year-olds, especially pitchers, don't get that kind of deal. So his agent's probably going to tell him, F their contract, F their extension, take the $21 million, pitch your ass out for this year, and then see if you can get another 3-year deal next year. So it's just the jump from what they might offer him to what he can make at $21 million. It's just going to be too much. He's going to accept it.
Yeah. So I was saying on the previous episode, you're going to have to give him probably 3 years, $45 million to get away from the 21. That's how much
I'd be okay with that too. I think those numbers actually line up.
I don't, that's $15 million a year for the next 3 years. He just made seven and he wasn't that good making seven. So I can't, I was happy that the Nick Pivetta era was over and that hopefully the bar was going to be higher and we were just going to move on. If Nick Pivetta was a good pitcher, his ERA, his Red Sox ERA is 4.36. That's what he's done since arriving with us. If he was a good pitcher, he would have helped get us into the postseason. And the one postseason we did play with Nick Pivetta, he only made one start. He was pitching out of the bullpen because that's where the confidence level was with Nick Pivetta. So it's just he's not worth $45 million to me. Another team that's going to put him in a pitching lab might do it, but I don't think the Red Sox would have figured him out by now if they could have done it with two different pitching coaches. Here's another thing. How many pitchers in Red Sox franchise history have made $21 million or more in a year? Any idea?
I think one only, maybe two.
No, it's probably It's got to be at least three or four.
Only two.
Really? Only two?
Hey, yeah. I would say Clemens and Petey.
No, you have to factor inflation in. Because
a price.
Obviously, shit. Pedro would have been worth way more today than what we paid him. So you got to factor that in. But only David Price and Chris Sale have made more than that in a year. Porcello was close, just under 21. Lackey made $17 million in his highest season with the Red Sox, and I
had 18 in my head for Price, like $18 million in my head for Price, but that might have been the
he got
post payout stuff or something that we were on the hook for.
$32 million a year for him. Yeah, he's
and Sale was up at 30 something too, wasn't he?
Well, some years he was
towards the end,
and then no, I think the earlier years, or maybe it was towards the end actually, he was right around 30, between 25 and 30, based on how they structured it, and it was worth 145 overall, and that was after the final option. So you could say, you know, it was really 160 something, but. But yeah, so it makes no sense. Did you guys see the movie Draft Day? Have you guys seen that movie?
I actually have. Yeah,
way back.
Oh, so it's a good movie. I mean, it's almost like the Moneyball of football movies to me, but less realistic. I'll say that it's not really a realistic movie, but it's so what it is, and a chunk of the audience should know. Is Kevin Costner plays the GM of the Browns, and he's got, I think he starts out with the 7th pick, and then he trades for the number one pick. He gives up his three number ones the next 3 years after for the number one overall, because we're going to get a stud quarterback. But then he had concerns about that quarterback. So he drafted a defensive end, and everybody's like, you're watching the movie and you're like, what the hell just happened? Well, that's what Breslow did. It was just a move that made no sense. And he just doesn't know what he's doing. And I gave the analogy at the start of the show before we came on. I said, it's like giving your 6-year-old child the keys to the car and say, hey, go get milk. and come right home. Like, that's what's going on right now. It's scary. And Breslow is so stupid, and maybe it's not just him, maybe it's a collaborative thing with some of the other executives, but you shouldn't trust him to trade for a Garrett Crochet, because maybe you do lose your Roman Anthony. It's a dangerous situation. with him doing that. It's a huge concern. But my final point on Pivetta, I mentioned it in the last show. I think I mentioned it in the war room as well. Richard Fitz can probably give you a 4.36 ERA or Quinn Priester.
Big Mountain.
And they'll do it for 700,000. But we're gonna watch Nick Pivetta do what Nick Pivetta does every year for 21 million. That's what's going to happen. Like I said, it's going to take at least 3 years, 45, to get him away from the 21 million. You can't just give him 30 million over 3 years, 10 years per, because he'll get that money by the end of next season anyway, after he gets the 21 and then whatever deal he signs next year. The math just doesn't work. It's a bad math equation for Craig Breslow. And the only thing that makes a little bit of sense is that he'll decline the offer. In Breslow's mind, I mean, the only thing that makes sense to Breslow is maybe Pivetta will decline it. But there's nobody giving up. Nobody's going to overpay for him to get him to decline it and then give up a draft pick. That will not happen.
I think we're also assuming that he's only looking for a bag for 1 year, too. We really don't know what his intentions are.
Oh, no.
He might be wanting to settle down because he's in his 33 or 34 year. He no. might be looking for that 3, 4, 5 year contract. Well, that's what hung us up for Montgomery last year.
That is what he wants.
We wouldn't give him a contract for more than 2 years, a year or two. And he wanted the three. And that was the breaking point of him saying no. So maybe Pivetta is looking for a longer deal, and that might be why this is happening. I mean, they may be cooking all this up behind the scenes without us even knowing. Like, they give him the qualifying offer, so it puts him on the table. If somebody does want to pay him more, the Red Sox will say, salute, bye. But if nobody does want to pick up, then we're going to give you that 3-year at $13 million, and we're going to call it a day. There's a lot of stuff that happens with those deals, and they're giving us very minimal information. So I really feel like we're speculating with everything. So, I mean, I don't know. Occam's razor here.
His agents probably would be asking, without the qualifying offer, they'd be asking for a 4 or 5 year deal. He would probably end up with a 3-year deal when all was said and done. But
that makes sense, yeah.
But it's just $21 million. I mean, geez. Let me pull up his thing here real quick just to see how much he's made. I don't know if he's made more than that ever, really.
I actually,
last year arbitration was only like 7-something, right? Before that was like 4.
He was an arbitration guy basically the whole time he was here, and I think at max he made what, 7 or 9 million towards the end. So
7 last year.
Yeah, he has. What was the year before? 21.
he's made 16 and a half million his whole career. He might make 21 this year.
That's what I'm saying.
So that's all you need to know.
They're cooking something. Him taking this $21 million, no, it's there's something else going on. They're moving pieces around.
And after he takes it, let's look at what you have in house. Giolito is in the rotation. Tanner Houck is in the rotation. Brian Bayo is in the rotation, and Carter Crawford is in the rotation. So Nick Pivetta fills it out. You have 5 starters there with Fitz and Priester in AAA. And someone's going to get hurt anyway. And one of them will pitch a ton of innings this year at the major league level. But there's just no room for – it doesn't make sense to – you're not – Max Fried is done. We can put that to bed. That's not happening, and a lot of us wanted it to happen. So I don't. If Pivetta takes it, there's just no room. Maybe you trade Crawford, but
I mean, maybe so a trade could be in the works with someone like Crawford or, you know, one of those guys. But I also just love the newfound rhetoric that, well, no, he was good out of the bullpen last year. Maybe they're paying him to be the closer. Oh, so he's going to make more than Kenley did as a guy who's never been a closer before in his career? That's cute. That's a really good, like, just cute rationalization from just the absolute lowest form of the kids' table of Red Sox Nation. Like, no, it's a smart move. They're giving him $21 million because he's going to be the closer. He's going to be the next Mo Rivera. Yeah, like, you people, it's just... Part of it's because for my job, I have to doom scroll on Twitter all day and I see this crap. But like, that was my favorite one. It's like, oh no, it's not a stupid move. He's going to be the closer. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You paint such a hilarious picture. I was off mic, but I was pissing myself. Damn. You were spot on, man.
Even Merlone was like, well, it might not be the worst move. Let's just see what happens. I'm like, Lou. Oh man, it's just so bad. All right, let's just do some rapid fire quick hits. The Red Sox are supposedly interested in, I lost my page. I don't need my notes anymore. So they're supposedly interested in Willy Adames, which makes no sense. He's going to get 4 or 5 years. We're not giving it to him, but the beat writers are trying to link him to us. They're trying to say we're in on Juan Soto. That's mostly Heyman. Nightingale says no. I did see some stuff on Teoscar Hernandez. That's somewhat plausible, but the thing with Teoscar is he's not signing until after Soto, I would think. He's stupid if he does because he's the next best option. So let somebody sign Soto and then let the bidding war play out for you. And I don't think the Red Sox are going to want to be in a bidding war.
Well, they haven't been successful winning those recently. So
no, and it's not a desirable place to play either. So there's a lot going wrong here. If you're the Red Sox and you're trying to attract a Teoscar type guy. So I don't know. Any thoughts, Jason?
Yeah. So, Juan Soto's a pipe dream. He's not coming here. I'll actually make an official prediction on him. Juan Soto, by or before Christmas, will be a Met. He's going to the Mets. So I just, that's just kind of the way I see it playing out. I make a lot of predictions on this show. They're usually wrong, so don't take it to the bank. But, you know, just take that for what it's worth. With Teoscar, man, I would love him here. Because he even said, like, Fenway's his favorite park to hit at. And you can see why. He's a pole power hitter and, you know, makes sense. I don't think the Red Sox would want, because he got the QO. So you have to give up a draft pick to sign him. So I just don't think that this Red Sox front office, they covet draft picks. They covet young guys. I don't see it happening. Even if Teoscar's like, I really want to play for you, they won't do it. He's going to, and I saw the other team that he's strongly linked to is Baltimore. Baltimore's going to give up draft picks because they don't have to draft anymore. Their window is open. So they've already got all their young guys. Now, he probably won't have as good of a year there because they pushed the left field wall back stupidly, but they did. So, but I just think he's going to go somewhere like that. I think the Red Sox will negotiate with him, but they're going to get too scared to give up the draft pick. And, you know, and again, he's going to want a lot of money. I think you're right. He's going to wait till after Soto, and he is going to want more than what he would have been asking for last year. So it's going to be an embarrassing look because they're going to circle back. They should have signed him last year. They didn't because they wouldn't give him the third year or whatever it was. So they failed at that negotiation. And then this year, he's going to ask for a lot more money, and they won't want to give up the draft pick. So those two combined, they're going to say, nope, it was too expensive, and we can't sacrifice our future, or some stupid statement like that that Breslow will come out with. So I don't have hope on either of those. Again, Soto, no way. He'll be a Met. Teoscar, I would love, but I just don't. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Baltimore's well where he's going to end up. Either that, or he goes back to the Dodgers. But he's not coming here.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't know. Like, our outfield's kind of crowded right now, so for us to entertain, you know, a Soto or Teoscar Hernandez, it would only make sense that we got to start dumping off like some of these big prospects to get those folks in here. If they weren't willing to make those moves at the trade deadline last year, I don't think they're willing to make those moves now. I don't think Hernandez really has a place on the team, giving the log jam that we have now. I mean, he would obviously be at the top of that, but then that would just create more of a log jam behind, and then we got to figure out what to do with those players. So they got to be part of that deal to get him over. Soto, no chance in hell. Everything that I'm reading with Soto, they're looking at, you know, a 10 to 13 year deal that's gonna like crest to like $700 million. And he's not gonna do the Ohtani thing and be like, you know what, pay me later, let's win some rings right now. He's gonna be like, pay me now. And the Red Sox are absolutely not going to do that. They're not gonna get in bed with this guy for 13 plus years or 10 plus years for that amount of money. It's not going to happen. That kind of money would be face of the franchise kind of thing. They've already hedged their bets. The face of the franchise, number one, we all know, is Fenway Park. You come for the experience. Number two, Rafi Devers. They gave him the bag. They want him to be on the posters when you come into Fenway and all that good business. Now they need like one or two other players so they can have that magic three to slap on posters for everybody. It's not going to be Soto. It's not going to be Hernandez. It's just there's no path forward with our organization and how our folks spin and how they evaluate players. Not a chance in hell.
The numbers for Soto being kicked around right now are $600 to $700 million. And I'm just going to say it. I'm not giving that to anybody. I don't care. Soto was on the Padres with at least a few Hall of Famers surrounded by him in that lineup, and they didn't do anything. And they got to the World Series with the Yankees this year. He had a very good year, don't get me wrong, but they didn't win it, and it was probably one of the weakest American leagues I've seen since 2014. And I just
don't... That's saying something, too. Like, the American League mashup against the National League, that's really, really saying something. That was a very bold statement you made.
I mean, the ALCS in 2014 was the Royals and the Orioles. And the Orioles were nowhere near as good as they are right now back then. And I know the Royals were actually decent. I mean, that was a team with no rotation either year, and it was built all around the bullpen, and it wasn't, that was insane. I don't think you'll ever see that again, but no team could recreate that is what I'm saying. But I don't see the value in that. You know, Teoscar Hernandez last year would have been nice on whatever the Red Sox, like, that he would have been amazing in that outfield, and maybe that wins you four or five more games. And had they gotten that one extra starter, we're probably a playoff team. But
we were only like six out, so that could have made the difference.
It was self-inflicted, you know, this 81 win year that we just had. So those are the moves I want to make, not the $600 or $700 million ones. You know, the Nationals, I mean, if they weren't stupid, they could have signed him at age 20 to a 10 or 12 year deal for probably three something. And that, I'd do that. I mean, that's might be what we have to do with Anthony. If he tears the cover off the ball right away, you're giving him a 10 to 12 year deal. And I would do that at that point in his career. I would absolutely do that. But
now, that's what worries me, though, is like after the Ohtani deal, and now we're looking at the Soto deal, like during this offseason, and we're looking at like, you know, $500 million like throwing at players. Like, is this the new norm? Like, is this, and it's not even the amount of money that's getting thrown down, it's the length of the contracts. And this started back in 22, 21. I mean, like Xander did his 10-year bit, like he signed that deal. Like, these contracts are going from like 3 and 5 year deals to like 10-year deals. And now we're looking at a Soto deal that might be like a 13-year deal. You really want to invest that much in 13 years of a player when you have no idea how they're going to break down or all this other stuff? It's, everybody is front loading the money if they got it now, like the Mets, the Padres, the Dodgers, the Yankees and stuff like that. And then you got these other teams who are just kind of hanging back. Maybe they're weathering the storm of this flurry of money that's going on right now, because eventually, like, I feel like if this goes on too much, somebody's gonna step in and be like, look, we gotta throw a salary cap on.
Soto's actually,
it's getting ridiculous at this point.
He's gonna get a 14-year deal minimum. That'll take him to age 40.
That's what I'm saying, that's insane. That's 14 years.
That's it.
14 years. Can you imagine that happening in like the NFL? Like them grabbing a quarterback out of college and being like, 14 years, man. Boom, here you go. Not
crazy to think
insane.
About.
It's absolutely insane.
Anyone who has a kid born tomorrow is going to have a high schooler by the time that contract ends. I'm just saying. That's how I look at it.
What's that going to say for the sport in 10 years? Like, is it going to just like deteriorate? Or are we going to start seeing things like, who was it? Arizona, DFA, what's his nuts? He was a major, like, ace pitcher.
Oh, and Madison Bumgarner.
Thank you, Bumgarner.
He was cooked, though.
Are we gonna start seeing that? These massive contracts, like, 7 years from now, 5-7 years from now, where they're not paying out, and these guys are so worthless, they'd rather just eat the cost and DFA them out?
You're going to see a surge, absolutely, because the Dodgers actually won it with Yamamoto and Ohtani, and you're going to see a surge for at least a few years, and then eventually there'll be a market correction and it'll come down a little bit, but that's why I didn't want the Dodgers. That's why it was so painful that the Padres blew that series. Dylan Cease pitching against the Dodgers bullpen in game 4, and they didn't get it done, and then they didn't get it done in game 5, so that was painful. But all right, we'll wrap it on that. But wow, 1 hour and 8 minutes.
It always goes a bit longer. Yeah. I'm sorry, I was trying this out, fellas.
We're good. All right, and we will be back as things develop. Probably, I'm guessing the Pivetta decision will be what the next show is about. But we'll see. You never know. You never know with Breslow. We might get a Tyler O'Neill signing tomorrow. Is it Breslow
Shut
met
up.
With Boris?
Shut up. I don't want a Tyler O'Neill signing. No.
Breslow has a narrow comfort zone and he sticks to what he knows. I think we're getting Tyler O'Neill. That's a shitty way to end the show, but that's what I just did. You guys have a good one.